If you know your American history, you know that Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. That was 2 years before the actual end of the Civil War. And even upon that occasion, it's not like slaveholders in the South happily swung open the gates on the spot. It was June 19th of 1865 that Union troops informed former slaves in Galveston, Texas, that they were free under the law. The day has come to be called Juneteenth since that time. It is observed starting today at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with events including a variety show, a play reading, and an art display. Whitney Reed is from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, where she's membership and patron engagement coordinator, and she is in the studio with us. Whitney, good to have you once again.
Great to have you. Great to be with you.
And we also have with us Kokai Nosakere, who's an Ashland activist, and he calls himself a community voice amplifier, who'll be attending the events today. Kokai, thank you for joining us today.
Grand Rising, and thank you.
Let's get some general thoughts about Juneteenth and the significance of the day. I know some people call it the real Independence Day. I mean, who wants to talk first about what? Yeah, each one is deferring. Whitney, why don't you go first? I introduced you first.
Cool. So a little bit about Juneteenth. So anywhere between June 13th and June 19th, which is why we call it Juneteenth because it's not specific, is the day that soldiers came in to let slaves, Africans born in America, let them know that they were now free. And this was about 2 years after they actually were free. So it speaks to not only like freedom that we have, but the time that it takes for us to gain the knowledge of the fact that we are actually free. And I mean, even that we speak on that today in so many different ways. So Juneteenth is a time to actually celebrate. It's a time to liberate, for others to liberate you, but also for you to celebrate liberating yourself.
It took a while, it sounds like, even, I mean, obviously we're talking about the lag between Emancipation Proclamation, end of war, and declaration of you're free.
Yeah.
But it sounds like even in Juneteenth observances, it took a while to develop into a regular thing, even in places like Galveston where it happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something about celebrating yourself as a person of color and as an African born in America. It's something you're taught. You're not supposed to celebrate yourself, and you're supposed to be grateful for every single thing that you have. So at some point, you have enough self-love to say, like, I deserve to celebrate myself. But when I'm celebrating myself, I'm also celebrating my ancestors who, you know, worked day in, day out, from sun up to sundown, working. I mean, if you're listening right now, most likely you're wearing a piece of apparel that's cotton. If you eat 7 days of the week, you're going to eat some rice. You know, you're going to be affected by the works of our ancestors. And so at some point, we just say, okay, it's time to celebrate. It's time to celebrate ourselves now, and it's time to celebrate, you know, the people who really created this manifestation concept, you know, manifesting ourselves out of slavery into this new free space, you know. And freedom is not just physical, but it's also mental. So celebrating Juneteenth is so important because it's a good reminder. And for some people, it's like a new year. Some people, it really is like the start of their new year, which I love. I love it. Yeah.
Good. Kokai Nosakere, give us your thoughts on Juneteenth and how it strikes you and your psyche.
Well, I'd have to agree with everything that Whitney just said and emphasize the importance of kujichagulia, or creating culture. Having space and carving it out in America where enslaved persons could reflect back on who and what they are, the meaning of resilience and how it is maintained, and then move forward with plans. Because for 10 years after they received that information that they were free, they acted like they were free. And you have beautiful images of daughters who went off to school teaching their mothers at night how to read and write. Like that very basic skill set that we take for advantage right now in 2019 because we use social media so much, of being able to read and write as a access, as a way to access freedom or even talk about freedom or experience freedom, something just that simple. So, yeah, peace.
So, Whitney, something you said a few minutes ago about we're taught to be grateful for what we have, mm-hmm. when you're African, but
of the diaspora.
American. Yeah. Is it that overt? I mean, you're making a face already.
I'm sorry. I gave it away.
But it really was like, you'd be grateful that you're not like your ancestors. Was it pretty much spelled out that way to you growing up?
I mean, if you talk to your friend, mm-hmm. talk to your friend about slavery today, you know, what will be the response? Like, it was a long time ago, you should get over it, you should be happy, right? And that's okay if that's what you think, you know. I recently went to Ghana, and it was my first time out of the country, and first time in Africa, period, on the continent of Africa. And now that I'm back, I do feel very grateful. I do feel really grateful for the trip that my, you know, ancestors made over here forcibly. You know, like when we're talking about our ancestors, we're also talking about like the root of American economy. You know, we're talking about the first victims of human trafficking, of sex trafficking. You know, we're really talking about that with our history. And so sometimes people don't want to go deep with that. They don't want to have that conversation. And so it's easier to just say, hey, I know that was back then, but be grateful for now. You know?
Right. So it's like, come on.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to dig deep into the work that I need to do as a human. You know,
because it reflects on other ancestors, not just just yours.
Because
yeah.
We were all a part of this. We were all a part of this scheme, right? Mm. This human Ponzi scheme.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We are talking about Juneteenth here on the program today. June 19th, 1865 was the date that Union troops in Galveston, Texas informed former slaves that they were in fact former slaves and therefore were free. Obviously, it's taking just a little while to realize all of the dreams of that day in American history, but Juneteenth is observed with a couple of different events, including a variety show, play reading, and gallery show at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Whitney Reed from the festival is here. She's membership and patron engagement coordinator, and community activist Kokai Nosakere is with us as well. So Whitney, can you line up the events of the day at the Shakespeare Festival?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Okay, so 10 o'clock is the Jet Gala. It's going to be in the Black Swan. The Jet Gala is the Juneteenth Met Gala extravaganza, and it's going to talk about forced African and Aboriginal labor as a stimulant for U.S. economy. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to have a free play reading. Again, I say a free play reading. Just go to the box office and get your tickets. You can get up to 4. Per person. And that's going to be a play by Christina Anderson, The Ripple, Wave That Carried Me Home. And Christina Anderson is also the writer of How to Catch Creation, which will be running at the end of the season, directed by the incoming artistic director, Nataki Garrett, at the end of the season. And then we have at 5:30, the annual variety show. You're going to have some singing, some dancing, poetry. You're going to have musicians. You're going to have Christiana Clark, who is now back in town, coming back from the Goodman Theater in Chicago, from the Guthrie in Minneapolis. So we're so excited to have her back. She just got back last week, so she'll be hosting. And then we are actually sponsored this year by Northwest Pizza. So afterwards, we'd love for everyone to go to Northwest Pizza and really support their business. And in between the reading at 11 o'clock and the variety show at 5:30, we'll actually have our members affinity group, which is Members for Equity and Members in Conversation, holding conversations in our members lounge. So not only will they talk about membership for sure, but they'll also also talk about what are ways that you can become a better ally to people of color in the Rogue Valley and beyond.
And what kinds of ways do you have in the way of educating people who want to be better allies? I mean, I know from previous discussions on this program, people want to know, what can I do? How can I be helpful?
Yeah. So one thing I would say, I mean, I currently am employed by Oregon Shakespeare Festival. We have affinity groups. Those affinity groups are, we have a... employees with disabilities or that have different ability concerns. We have a POC affinity group. We have white anti-racist groups. But we also have a members group. So that members group is called Members for Equity, or M4E. And they have a subsidiary called Members in Conversation. And I think really if you want to have these conversations at least once a week, then I would say come to OSF, come to the Members Lounge, and you can have that conversation pretty much every day of the week if you'd like. All you need to do is just come in, you know, learn about membership, and then get a side conversation about racial equity and becoming a better ally, social justice initiatives, because Oregon Shakespeare Festival is a social justice institution.
But you have to be a member, you're saying, to be in Members for Equity, a member of the festival.
Yes, but I mean, there's so many different ways to become a member. You know, there's so many different ways. I mean, it starts very low. We're not going to talk numbers right now, but I would definitely say come in, come to the Members Lounge. It's always free to come to the Members Lounge. Yeah.
I want to also point out that the play reading we talked about, The Ripple, The Wave That Carried Me Home by Christina Anderson, is directed by Rob Goodwin.
Absolutely.
Who is our backup host here on The Exchange.
Yeah. Rob is so incredible. I mean, not only is Rob the interim director of education at Oregon Shakespeare Festival, but Rob is also a director. Rob is also an actor. Rob is a producer. Rob is actually dramaturging How to Catch Creation this year at the end of this season. You know, Maya Angelou talks about a phenomenal woman. Rob is definitely a phenomenal man, and we're really excited to have him as director of The Ripple, The Wave That Carried Me Home.
Juneteenth, the discussion topic here in the Jefferson Exchange. You can join in. Whitney Reed has to leave in a couple of minutes, so I want to make sure that we get a chance for you to talk to her before she goes. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Kokai Inosakere, talk about what you'll be doing today on these with these Juneteenth observances.
Experiencing some of the joy that you keep hearing coming out of Whitney while we celebrate being free. So I plan to leave here and go to the Black Swan and begin the celebration. That's what I plan to do today. I plan to connect with my ancestors and remember that the resiliency that I read about in the books flows through me, that it isn't something abstract, it isn't cognitive, it isn't an idea that's outside of me. It is me. And I get to tap into it. And today is one of those days where we give ourselves permission to celebrate being Black in America and what that means to us right here, right now in 2019.
Is this your first? You moved here last year, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So is this your first Juneteenth in Ashland?
This is officially yes, because last year I ran back up to Alaska for a short-term contract. And so they just had the Juneteenth celebration this weekend in Anchorage, Alaska, and 2,500 people came out. Juneteenth is celebrated across the board now, pretty much as far as I know, from coast to coast, with more elaborate presentations in larger communities. However, I'm here in Ashland, and the persons who are here and are able to get together, see each other, and pop, because there is a certain marvelness to being here in America in 2019 in this particular body and in this skin, having this particular experience.
So talk about, you mentioned there's no cost for any of the events at OSF's Juneteenth.
No, all of the events are free. So if you have $0, if you have $5, we really like to raise our money so that we can have our education program, so that we can reach out to people of color and students all over the Rogue Valley and get them into training programs here at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Because we want to illuminate the diversity of what the United States looks like on stage. That's the that is what we want to do at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So we understand in order to do that with the next generation, we have to train the next generation. If you have $0, come. If you have $50 to donate, you're more than welcome to come. But we want to see your face out there. Your spirit is what we're really looking for. So we look forward to seeing you out there.
I had a chance to visit with Bill Rausch early last month, to talk about his diversity work at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And he said that he kept pinned up on his office wall for a long time the note from somebody who said, "Are the Mexicans taking over OSF?" You know, so responses from the audience have not always been particularly positive to diversity initiatives. And I just wonder if that's ever filtered back your way.
My way in what
well,
in
and
what
you get, you hear it from members about you know, are they, it's too diverse or anything like that.
Well, you know, it's a process. You know, I think as a woman of the African diaspora, I'm trained from a child how to accept whiteness every day from the moment I get slapped on my butt, whatever. But
you mean to be like whiteness?
Well, the closer I can get, right? So, like, if I'm talking like this and I'm at home and I'm chilling with my family and we're having a good time, if I go to school and I talk like that, my grades are affected, the way I'm looked at upon with my teachers, my educators is affected. So I have to learn how to code switch. I have to become more crisp and more clean because that is what whiteness expects of me. But that's not really who I am. Mm. So I need to, as we grow, we need to find ways to express ourselves. And just how we had that training from a young age, whiteness is kind of in the reverse. They're learning at an older age how to accept versus how to control. And so I love the work that Bill Rausch has done because he's been able to see himself and he's been able to see, you know, his shortcomings in other people and be able to really shift and shape and mold and help mold this valley and make it a safe and welcoming place for all people. So I'm so excited to be at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. I'm so excited. It's Juneteenth, 2019. Oh, it's actually my half birthday. So I'm really excited. Today is a great day for me.
Yeah. So your birthday is December 19th?
Yes, it is.
Well, happy birthday.
I accept gifts.
Happy half birthday.
All that.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I guess it's time for us to say goodbye.
You need Thank you all.
Thank you so much, Whitney Reed, for taking the time to talk to us. I know Whitney mentioned she hadn't got a lot of sleep the last couple of days and getting ready for Juneteenth, but thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Whitney is the director of the membership and patron engagement coordinator at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The events start 11 o'clock this morning at...
It starts at 10 o'clock in the Black Swan in the Jet Gala, the first annual Jet Gala.
Okay, Whitney, thanks again for joining us. Let me remind our folks that we're still talking to Kokai Nosakeri here on the Jefferson Exchange, and you can join us here as we talk about Juneteenth and explore the subject matter further. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org, and I hope that if you have a Juneteenth event going on in the region that we have not heard about on the air yet, that you will join us and tell us about it. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So Kokai, let's turn to you and talk about being in a couple of fairly white places in the world, Anchorage and Ashland, Oregon, and trying to function as a community activist in that environment.
Well, I'd like to pivot off of what Whitney just said and open the door to, because I think there are a couple of historical questions that we can look at and pierce through the mechanic of the interpersonal that we spend a lot of time on. Like, if we're nice to each other, then we'll resolve the inequalities that are between each other. Whereas historically, one of the historical questions that comes out of Juneteenth is, what does it mean to be an American? Let me paint the scene. Imagine you are Thomas Jefferson Jr. You know your mother is Sally Hemings, who is about the complexion of Merkel over in England. You are sitting in front of your father, and you are now asking for your emancipation papers, because there are six children that he has with Sally Hemings, starting at the age of, what, I think her first child was 14?
Really? Oh, wow.
Yes, okay. And he was in his 40s. But Thomas Jefferson Jr., looking at father, the question running through his head of what does it mean to be an American and what's going through the father's head are two different things, and that's within the same, that's still the founding fathers, right? So by the time we get to generation 5 and 6, which give rise to the Civil War, that conversation hasn't progressed too much. When Emancipation Proclamation is put forth as a political idea between William Lloyd Garrison, Frederick Douglass, and Abraham Lincoln, and then implemented and seeing there wasn't a rebellion. They didn't get a rush of the enslaved persons to come and help the army. What they got was confusion on what do we do now? Some said, bottom rail upon top, sir, bottom rail upon top, and walked off the plantation right then and there. Most were confused and had to go through the emotions of do we stay or do we go? Just like Thomas Jefferson Jr., okay? Most of the, with the documents that we have, and I'm pulling from Eugene Genovese, The World the Slaves Made, which was used a lot for Underground, the TV series, that the former slave masters, when they got the message, they broke down crying while they saw the former enslaved walk off, saying, where are you going? Your family.
Really?
Yes. Just like Thomas Jefferson Sr. So, what does it mean to be American? What does freedom mean? If I like made, when I made a statement earlier that I can read and write now, and my ancestors could not read and write, that starts talking about a mechanic that we know we can overcome because, you know, you can go from being illiterate to literate. But what it means, coming from someone like me, it's been four generations, but it's still a marvelous thing to know that I can become famous now from reading and writing where there are people in my bloodline who don't know what I'm talking about. It wasn't possible.
It was prevented.
Yes, prevented. And so we, when we're talking like nowadays about the mechanics of interracial and intercultural interactions, there is a certain set of work that hasn't been done yet in America because we haven't answered those two questions. Or it keeps getting framed, like Whitney said, in relationship to this thing called whiteness that I see the former French, the former German, the former Irish, the former English have to come into relationship too. Because if I go to West Virginia and try and talk to them about oppression, they're going to be saying, they're going to be raising their hands saying, you're talking about us. Okay, so the relationship to whiteness goes across the board. It isn't just something for the Mexicans and the former Africans and the Native First Nation persons to navigate. Yes, so moving forward in 2019 with the decisions that we have locally and nationally, I haven't found much resistance when I interact with people, because we literally don't have a way to talk about these things without getting so defensive because it's based in our identity. What does it mean to be an American? What does freedom mean? That we can't navigate that without bringing up all the past traumas that have instituted what it means to be an American so far. It's more of the trauma bond between the Joker and the Batman that we keep navigating over and over again in each incident. Like, for example, on November 26th, when a young man was stopped and wrongfully arrested, and it took
in Ashland,
and it took somebody from inside the jail who could recognize that brother for who what he was to get him out, meaning that the mechanics were geared in 2018, 2019 to oppress this black body, and the persons who were doing it, if we gave them a lie detector test right now, they would literally believe themselves to be completely innocent. They didn't do anything wrong, and we have to keep asking ourselves, why does this behavior continue? Because we haven't wrestled with these questions. What does it mean to be an American? What does freedom really mean?
And in the case you're citing, that young man of color was arrested because somebody else had committed a crime. He was a person of color, and that was the only thing he really had in common with the perpetrator. And was, 10 hours was it in jail he spent?
He spent all night in jail. That's what we have confirmed. And as far as I know, he's no longer in the area because he just doesn't want to deal with the harassment and the microaggressions. The conversation also on that front, when we stick with the interpersonal, it comes across with the binary of just good and bad, of morality, and not that this has got historical backing to it. We're acting as if Dr. King knocked on white people's doors in Montgomery and taught them too. He didn't. He would have died. No one came to teach those persons in Montgomery how to behave with persons of color. The entire civil rights movement was that. He would go to a city, confront the racism, and then there would be no teaching. Billy Graham didn't come and teach them how to be more human. There weren't Dale Carnegie classes. There was no training on how do we now interact with these persons that we used to lynch as full human beings and not as persons that we can break at will.
Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about Juneteenth today on the program. June 19th, 1865 is the day that Union troops arrived in Galveston, Texas and informed former slaves that they were in fact former slaves. It's a day celebrated through American history, spottily it seems like, particularly through the 19th century, but with more force over time, to celebrate liberation in America. It's the second Independence Day, the real Independence Day in some people's minds, celebrated with a couple of events today at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, starting with the Jet Gala display at 10 o'clock this morning, a play reading at 11, directed by Rob Goodwin, who is a frequent host here on the Jefferson Exchange, and then a variety show this evening at 5:30. We have with us community activist Kokai Nosakere, who calls himself a community voice amplifier. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So you got me thinking in the last discussion, Kokai, about how we do talk about the way we have treated each other in the past, particularly about how white people have treated people of color in America and how we move into a new realm. How do we need, and Whitney had talked earlier about the fact that there's a lot of people like, come on, it's over, get over it. You know, slavery was a long time ago. But It seriously set back an entire group of people for a very long time from which they are still attempting to recover. So how far back do we take the discussion? I mean, you were talking about Thomas Jefferson Jr. just a minute ago, son of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. I mean, when I look at like what's happened in places like South Africa with reconciliation commissions, is that the level to which we need to take things in America?
It would be a start. It would be a start. Because then there would be an emotional reckoning to what has happened in America instead of the intellectual distancing that happens. Okay, so we've got two tools that are like fresh on the market that we can use when it comes down to having this conversation. One of them is the book White Fragility by Dr. Robin DiAngelo. In the political realm, those two words get weaponized, especially when we start talking about the left and right divide in the country. However, Robin DiAngelo is an academic. She is a sociologist. She talks about American socialization. So please go and read her original essay and get her definition of those two words and not use the third and second echo that you heard in the community of her two words. The second book is by a therapist out of Minneapolis named Erasma Menakam. And he is writing a book called My Grandmother's Hands. And he has specific diagnosis and prescriptions to how to deal with the racial trauma that all of us are walking around in by default in America. So those are the two tools that we have to begin having this conversation. So Robin DiAngelo is speaking specifically to where we just left off when I was talking about the civil rights movement and the 13 years that Dr. King forced America to confront segregation and what it was, the apartheid that South Africa was doing that was happening in America, right? And so you had people who literally said things in defense on television. Our Negroes are the best Negroes that are on the planet Earth right now. They're the best fed, they're the best housed, they're the best, they got jobs and opportunity. This was said, this was the mentality. No one came to teach. Robert DiAngelo is sitting up here attempting to find the words and concepts to talk about that mentality, separate from the personality that we do have a lot of control over, okay? Here comes Resma with a prescription of, we got white bodies, you have brown bodies, you got native bodies. Different things were done to those bodies. Now, soldiers go off to war, and they kill other people. When they come back, we say they have PTSD. The persons killed, they've got their own PTSD, but the soldier himself has PTSD. Likewise, you cannot practice slavery on other human beings for six generations and it not affect you. You can't lynch people for three generations and it not affect you. So just about everyone that is a part of the ninth generation, okay, which is the children of Dr. King, okay? And the eighth generation is still alive. Harry Belafonte, who financed Dr. King, he's still alive. Andrew Young, who was a lieutenant of Dr. King, still alive. The only person dead is Dr. King. Jesse Jackson, still alive. Louis Farrakhan, still alive. The eighth generation is alive. My father, ninth generation, he's alive. Me, I'm generation 10, I'm alive. The millennials, generation 11, they're alive. They've got the least amount of baggage. Okay, so, but we've got trauma from generation 8, generation 9, generation 10 that we're not talking about. And that trauma is this subtle. And then I'll let that go. Generation 9 and 10 got homes at maybe 3.4 interest rate. What is not said, and which is why we need the Truth and Reconciliation trials, is there were decisions made to where the white body person got the rate at 3.4, but the native person got it at 4.2. The black body person got it at 4.1 or 3.9. And that was done on purpose. That's redlining. That was done on purpose. And we don't know how to deal with the trauma of people waking up in white bodies and saying, so you mean to tell me even the house I'm in right now, I may not have authentic rights to because the system is so rigged for me against my will? That's a lot to process. We're now back in 1865. Why are you walking off the plantation? We're family. Mm. You invested here. All your life has been here. But I've been oppressed the whole time. I've had to work against my will the whole time. We didn't know anything else.
You bring up a great point with the housing stuff, because I was looking, I've been learning more about redlining the last couple of years, and my first home was in Levittown, New York, one of the first suburbs built to be a suburb, and I only found out within the last 5 years that it was completely redlined. Mm-hmm. No African-American families were allowed to live there, no Jewish families for that matter, even though the Levitts were a Jewish family. It's like, I understand this is what the market wants, and he was willing to roll with that.
Yes. So how do you process that? How have you processed that? Have you talked that over with family members?
I have.
And what was their response? What did they come up with? How did they reconcile themselves with that understanding?
I think the best what any of us could do is go, wow, that sucks. And it pretty much stopped there.
Understood. So that to me would be part of the conversation moving forward. And we have an opportunity with the new Green Deal and a couple of other national pieces of legislation. But locally, right now, that conversation can move forward with the work that I see coming out of Medford in response to low test scores and low self-esteem. The students who are identifying as persons of color are receiving additional support with the creation of black student unions up and down the line here in the Rogue Valley. So I do want to commend that advancement, because cultural reinforcements, the psychological armor that is necessary in order for you to self-actualize, has to come from somewhere. And so if we do not create a cultural system where we have youngers and elders, where we have a passage of information, where there's a place to be held, and you don't have to convince people of what's going on because they already see, just like you see, what's going on, and get past the socialization so then you can create transformative moments. Because lots of people in America, we're doing everything within our power just to get through the day, all right? And I'm trying not to get beat up and get home with some self-esteem left intact. And we got 22,000 people in Ashland, everyone attempting to enjoy the moment. And we get caught up trying to defend and be innocent in every interaction when microaggressions are happening based on our pre-programmed socialization, which is what D'Angelo forces us to look at, that is beyond the normal Oprah and Dr. Phil pop psychology of, well, let's always be nice, let's always be positive, let's always try and stay at the highest vibration, whereas the social justice wheel doesn't operate that way. We have a lot of people who have a hard time, and this is a microaggression, if they are in front of someone who is disabled, of looking at them in their face. Or if they're dealing with someone who's old and has wrinkles, because we have such a socialization to glorify the 17-year-old body that we don't look at them in the face and appreciate them for being a person. Okay? If you are in any of these so-called marginalized groups and you are in a white body interacting and learning how to interact with them outside of the socialization becomes the challenge. Like you were just saying, now dealing with anyone who wants to come in new to that housing community, right? An extra effort has to be made to welcome them in and learn how they want to be treated, because the socialization says there's a certain standard of how we do things here, but how we do things here created a negative space instead of a positive space where it's welcoming and everyone has access to the American genius by having their neighbors be reflective of America.
Let me get those names. Robin DiAngelo's book is White Fragility, right?
Yes, sir. And it's 1 year, about a year and a half old. And Resma Minicam, R-E-S-M-A-A, Resma Minicam, M-E-N-A-K-E-M, My Grandmother's Hands.
My Grandmother's Hands, okay. Talk about your history a little more.
From Anchorage, Alaska. So born in the 70s.
But when did the Million Man March is an interesting turning point for you, wasn't it?
Because I'm also coming from like the three most multicultural neighborhoods in the country, in a red state. So we have a Hmong community member next to a Somali, next to a black person, next to a white person, next to a Yupik, next to a Nupiak. All right. So I, in college, got the opportunity to go and attend the Million Man March, which was at the end of the Stop the Killing tour that Minister Farrakhan was doing. So he came and visited Anchorage in 1990. And so 5 years later, we were on, 16 of us, had a couple of elders who are still in Anchorage, traveled to the Million Man March. We got to see each other because it was amazing. Like, how do you see somebody from Alaska surrounded by 2 million people, right? But it happened. And since then, it was electric to understand that you can create history, that nothing was static, that you weren't confined to a set of conditions. We watched Minister Farrakhan get basically beat up for an entire year and him smile and say, "They hate me because I love you, and I want you guys to stop killing each other." So we raised our hand, and just like all the other rappers like Snoop Dogg, if I got in front of Minister Farrakhan, I'd probably start crying. But I'd be able to say, "Sir, 24, 25 years later, I have yet to put my hand down, helped increase the minimum wage in Alaska 3 times, and then engaged in a big paradigm shift inside the city opening up a media outlet with my friends. John Arano was the managing editor, and we took Anchorage, Alaska from being vehemently anti-LGBT to the point where discrimination, active discrimination against housing, active discrimination against receiving business services, to openly electing two gay persons to the city Congress, and it took us 5 years. So I know paradigm shifts can occur in our America.
Only got about 30 seconds left. I just want to ask about your Facebook video about let's build up the self-esteem of America. Is it a big job, given that we can't even seem to decide how well we're doing on factual measures?
It's a big job, but there are a lot of people who are working on it, and they're working on it on the ground. There's lots of grandmothers and lots of grandfathers who are doing that. We just got through celebrating one in Anchorage, Alaska called Mother Lawrence. She just died. And for the last 45 years, she fed 100 people every day. So we can do this.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. Kokai Inosa Kere. Whitney Reed was with us earlier to talk about the Juneteenth observances at Oregon Shakespeare Festival starting at 10 o'clock this morning. Kokai, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Asante sana.